if what you say in your book is true, if it's in our deepest instincts to be friendly and fair and peaceful, why is the world we're living in not like that? Why is the world not fair and not friendly and not peaceful very often?
Well, I think, in fact, most of the time it is. I think human beings have evolved to be friendly and to cooperate most of the time. The real question here is, why don't we believe this? Right? So why are so many of us convinced that even though our colleagues or our friends, you know, or the people around us may be relatively nice, but that other people, you know, the strangers on television and the people we read about in novels and you name it, that other people, you know, they're nasty and they're not. So that is, I think, the real question. Why do we believe this?
I'll give you an answer to this very important question in your book, because what you're saying is that for centuries, scientists, historians, politicians, even teachers and authors, you've just said that, are telling us something quite different. So have we all been kind of brainwashed?
Well, there is a very old theory within Western culture that some scientists call the veneer theory of civilization, right? So the idea is that civilization is only a thin veneer, right? And that as soon as something happens, say a natural disaster or kids shipwreck on an island or something like that, that we go back to our true selves, and that deep down, people are fundamentally selfish or even animals or beasts. Now, this idea of that civilization is only a thin veneer is deeply ingrained within Western culture. You find it with the ancient Greeks, you find it with the early Christian church fathers, you know, who already believed in this concept of original sin. You find it among the Enlightenment philosophers of the 17th and the 18th century, and you find it, you know, embedded within capitalism itself these days. So again and again and again, this idea pops up that, you know, deep down people are fundamentally selfish. The only problem with the theory is that it's basically wrong. So we now have new evidence from the past 15 to 20 years from very diverse scientific disciplines, you know, sociology, anthropology, psychology. And what we've seen happening is sort of a silent revolution. Scientists from very diverse disciplines have moved on to a much more hopeful conception of human nature, which is really more about friendliness and cooperation. And that most of the time, especially when we have to rely on each other, you know, after natural war, for example, or a natural disaster, what you see is an explosion of altruism and cooperation.
You've been mentioning the veneer theory, which basically means that there is a very thin layer of civilization that disappears if we get into a crisis or have to struggle in any way. So let's for a moment talk about something that's happening right now, the corona crisis. In Germany and probably in the Netherlands and elsewhere, people are buying masses and masses of tinned soup, toilet paper, even face masks in order to be able to sell them for a lot of money if the crisis gets worse. So isn't that a proof for this veneer theory?
Well, the corona so-called crisis very much reminds me of how media and journalists in particular respond to natural disasters. So what you see happening after a natural disaster, say after an earthquake or after a tsunami, you see all these stories about people looting and plundering and violence and rapes and all kinds of horrible stuff, right? You may remember the news about Katrina in 2005 when Orleans in the U.S. was flooded, terrible disaster. But the thing is, those are mostly rumors. So when the scientists go in and they do proper research and really see, you know, look at what the vast majority of behavior was after a natural disaster, they say, well, actually, you see this explosion of cooperation. And most of the behavior is actually pro-social in nature. People are really trying to help each other. But that's not what media focus on. I think this is really a problem with sort of our information supply. The news in itself, you know, the DNA of the news is that it focuses mostly on things that go wrong, right? Corruption, crises, terrorism, you name it. So if you follow a lot of the news all the time, at the end of the day, you'll have a sort of an upside down worldview, right? And you have a misguided view of human nature as well. And I think this is especially true for these crisis situations. So with natural disasters, we have now more than 500 case studies from around the globe that find, you know, that wherever this happens, people mostly cooperate and help each other, something that, you know, you never hear in the news. And I think that's actually also most of the behavior around the virus right now. I mean, most people are perfectly willing to, you know, obey by the rules and to do what they can to stop the virus from spreading. Sure, there's some hoarding here and there, But you know what? I think that the vast majority of people are really willing to help each other. And that is mostly what we are seeing right now and what we're going to see. It's just that it's not very newsworthy, right? That's not what's going to make the headline.
You go very far back in time in explaining these instincts and this natural friendliness in your book. And you tell us that really the survival of the fittest, as Darwin called it, was probably really the survival of the friendliest. And obviously this seems to be really have been the case when people were still hunters-gatherers. And then at some time it must have changed. So how did this instinct at least partly get lost?
Well, you have to imagine that for millennia, for thousands of years, we lived as nomadic hunter-gatherers. In small groups, relatively egalitarian groups, we really had to cooperate in order to survive. And this is also sort of our secret superpower as a species, right? So human beings are not very smart individually. You know, we don't have very big brains. Neanderthals, for example, had much bigger brains than we had. We're also not very strong. I mean, we're not even very good at climbing trees. But our secret superpower is that we can cooperate, right? We have been designed basically to cooperate. You can see this in our bodies even, right? So we're, for example, the only animal in the animal kingdom that blushes, right? Which is a very fascinating and peculiar fact, right? Why could it be evolutionary advantageous to blush, right? To involuntarily give your feelings away to other members of the species. And the reason, biologists now think, is that it helps us to cooperate. It helps us to trust each other. This is in our DNA. So this is basically the environment we lived in for thousands of years. And what we saw during those times was what scientists call survival of the friendliest. So it was actually the people who were seen as the most friendly who had the best chance at, you know, getting kids, getting a relationship, etc., and so passing on their genes to the next generation. Everything changed. Basically, everything changed merely 10,000 years ago, which is, you know, very short. If you zoom out a little bit, we've been living on this planet for more than 300,000 years, so 10,000 years ago is not that long. But 10,000 years ago, we settled down, and we started doing agriculture, and we started this whole experiment that we call civilization. And civilization, well, to put it bluntly, civilization has mostly been one big disaster.
Is there any way back? I mean, a way back into a kind of system where these instincts of being friendly and fair and cooperative and peaceful can be as important as they used to be?
Yes and no. So I'm obviously not arguing that we should, you know, go back and live as nomadic hunter-gatherers anymore. I don't think that's a realistic option. But I think what we can do is realize that we have evolved to be this very curious species, right? That it has evolved to be friendly to one another and to design our institutions in that way. I think the way we look at human nature can often be a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we assume that most people are selfish, if we assume that most people are evil or bad or whatever, then often we design our institutions around that idea. You know, our schools, our workplaces, our democracies, our prisons, and we create what we presuppose in each other. Now, if we turn that around, and if we actually assume that most people are im grunde good, you know, or want to help each other most of the time, then you can actually elicit the best in other people as well. That's really important here. So it's not just about what is true or what is false. It's also about what is the effect of believing this or that, right? It can be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
What you're admitting in your book is the number of people who have really, really lost this instinct to be nice and cooperative. The number of those people is extremely high among political and economical leaders. How can we deal with that?
Well, if we go back again to our original environment as nomadic hunter-gatherers, what you see among those tribes is that shame plays an incredibly important role, right? So in those environments, sort of imperative as a leader to be humble. And sometimes, you know, there are power differences in those tribes, but it's really mostly based on achievement, right? And not on money or other kinds of power or whatsoever. I mean, there's a reason that we are the only animal in the animal kingdom that blush. The thing nowadays in our so-called civilized society is that it has become much harder for us to tame those who are in power. And if there's one fact that we know from psychology, it is that power corrupts. You know, that could have been the longer title of my book. You know, people are in Grundgut, but power corrupts. So this is something that you continuously need to be aware of. And we have some systems to keep those who are in power in check. You know, we call it democracy. It's mostly elective aristocracy, I'd say. You know, we have the right to elect our own aristocracy. But still, you know, often it doesn't work that well. If you look at, for example, the modern business environment, around 4 to 8%, according to recent estimates of CEOs, have sociopathic tendencies, which would have been unimaginable, you know, 100,000 years ago, that you would be a leader if you were a sociopath. So that is very interesting, that we now sometimes seem to live in an environment that is not about survival of the friendliest, but more like survival of the shameless.
Wouldn't it be a first but very important step to really try to think about all these things, to think about our instincts, our old ones, and if we can get them back or not? Because what you're saying in your book, amongst other things, at the beginning of your book, is that it really was not easy for you to find a publisher for such a book.
Well, I used to be quite a cynical person myself, to be honest. You know, as a historian, you study all the terrible things and all the dark pages of human history. And so it's often quite difficult to believe in the good of humanity. But then I started realizing that in the past 15 to 20 years, you know, scientists from such diverse disciplines have moved to a different, much more hopeful conception of human nature. And I'm not saying that people are angels, right? We're definitely not. But it seems to be our true superpower, right? That we can cooperate on such a big scale. But then also the question is, how is it possible that we humans are not only the friendliest species in the animal kingdom, but also the cruelest, right? Because that's certainly true as well. There's never been a penguin species that says, you know, let's exterminate all other penguins, right? That these are sort of peculiar human crimes. So that becomes only more difficult if you say, well, veneer theory doesn't explain it. It doesn't explain, you know, ethnic cleansing or the Holocaust or you name it, then you have to think much deeper about how this can still happen. I mean, I write hundreds of pages about this in the book, obviously, so it's difficult to summarize. But I think a beginning of an answer you can already find in this new theory of biologists, which is to say that, yes, human beings have evolved to be friendly, but sometimes that friendliness is exactly the problem. You know, sometimes that becomes followership behavior. And we find it very hard to say no to the people who are in our own group, right? And then it becomes sort of tribal, groupish behavior. And this is something that you see happening throughout history very often, is that people often don't do evil because they're sadistic or whatsoever, because they're actually believing that they're doing good, you know, that they're helping their group while they're doing evil. And this is, I think, a much more uncomfortable message, but that we really need to understand as well.